Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM.
The Ontario government made a major announcement saying it was going to make changes to speed up the building of affordable housing and rental units. There are a number of sweeping changes meant to speed up the process and make it cheaper to build units. On the surface, it sounds great. But when I talked to Coburg planners at Town Hall, suddenly, there was a different picture. The money developers will save could end up on your tax bill. Plus, your ability to have input on building homes or rental units next door or down the street will be seriously curtailed. Hear how your money and your rights will be affected.
I'm so pleased to have with me today Ann Taylor Scott, the Director of Planning and Development for the Town of Coburg, and her colleague, Rob Franklin, Manager of Long Range Planning. Welcome to you both to Consider This.
Thanks very much, Rob.
Good afternoon.
The Ontario government is proposing many changes to the Planning Act. We have talked previously about some of those changes, and you and I, but now there are even more. When you look at the big picture, and not specifics, but what is your sense of what the government is trying to achieve when it comes to the creation of housing in the province of Ontario? And maybe, Anne, I'll start with you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Robert. So the Bill 23 that was released on October the 26th is what they consider an omnibus bill in that it amends 10 pieces of provincial legislation and acts. And there's really four that I see as being the main pieces of legislation that are being changed that would impact processes here in the town of Coburg. So the Bill 23 will amend the Conservation Authorities Act. It will amend the Development Charges Act. It will amend the Heritage Conservation Act, and it will amend the Planning Act, among other pieces of legislation.
Those three areas are going to be changed. Rob, can you help us understand, maybe from a long-range planning, how changing those acts might impact the larger development and the character of a place like Coburg or Port Hope or Brighton or Alnwick-Haldimand?
Well, within the overall scope of Northumberland, they're quite significant. They're broad-reaching changes, as Anne's mentioned, several major pieces of legislation. But to put a few of them in a nutshell, it basically strips authority from our conservation authority partners, Lower Trent and Ganaraska, to the point where they can only comment on floodplains, whereas they have been our partners in stormwater development, wetlands, terrestrial aquatic ecology, hydrogeology. These are departments that municipalities don't have skills in that we have relied on the CAs as our partners. And they can't talk about that stuff if this legislation goes through as it's worded. It also drastically impacts heritage properties. For those that are inside districts, maybe not too many changes, but those that are on the fringes or what we call on the register, those heritage properties, and we have a couple of hundred of them here in the town of Coburg, they either have to be designated, which is a full detailed heritage evaluation and bylaw for each one in the next 2 years, or they're gone, potentially removed right off the list and potentially then open for development, which I think is what the province is looking for, is more houses built quicker, I think is the name of the legislation, and or built faster. And that's exactly what they're looking at trying to do.
Yeah. And one of the biggest changes is the creation of things like up to three residential units on land that would currently be classified for one home in the residential area without needing a municipal bylaw amendment. And can you explain the impact?
Yes, thank you, Robert. It's certainly a big a big issue. I know the province has been working towards this for quite some time. There was legislation released a couple years ago to that effect, to basically say that zoning bylaws cannot prohibit that third unit. So some municipalities implemented that full steam ahead. Here in Coburg, it was a more conservative approach, in that where there is permission today to construct a single detached dwelling or to have a single detached dwelling on a lot, there is that ability today to have that secondary unit, whether it's in the basement or a coach house, and provided you get all the permits and everything, all the checks and balances play out. So that is a right that is in place for Coburg today in those appropriate zones. Now, the province's move is to, yes, allow that third unit as of right. And it is concerning. I think it's admirable that the province wants to address the housing crisis and to get more units occupied to address housing shortages. However, there are, as we know, and can be unintended consequences. So with that third unit, some things to think about as planners is parking, and where are folks going to park if we allow the third unit as of right? Also servicing. So do we have water supply and sanitary service capacity to accommodate all those toilets flushing, so to speak? Well, again, while I think it's admirable, there are those technical items that are going to be difficult to address without a rezoning or without a, you know, more thought, more approvals in place. And it is concerning, but it's certainly something that municipalities are going to have to pay attention to. I will mention that this third unit right across the province also applies to the rural areas. So that brings up a whole other host of planning and servicing issues, where those units would be utilizing private water supplies and private septic systems. So there could be some environmental implications, again, perhaps unintended consequences. Typically in the past, intensification and growth and development has always been focused on full municipal services, whether it be municipal or shared communal water and water supply, sanitary servicing. So I think this blanket approach for certain will have some unintended consequences, and for better or for worse, it's going to be upon municipal planners like Rob and myself to figure out, okay, this is legislated, how do we deal with this?
Well, that brings me, Rob, to expand on this and talk about intensification. I mean, there's always been talk about existing space and using it more effectively, or taking what we've got and you know, sort of milking it for all it's worth. I mean, I know even the town of Coburg right now is going through an inventory of available lands that maybe we didn't think of before. So this is not a new concept to us. Why aren't we popping the champagne and, you know, having a party that we're getting an opportunity to do this over the long range?
And I think Anne's brought up some of those key points of what we normally find on our standard residential lots is the larger ones, the 60, 80 foot lots that are in some of the middle, I'll call them the middle-aged areas of town compared to the old core or the newer 90s and newer subdivisions. You start putting two and three units in each of those properties. It's going to be a heck of a challenge for street parking. Many of those neighborhoods have got street parking problems potentially right now, that I'm sure if you talked to folks on the street, and I'd be interested actually, hearing from some of our new politicians who've been out campaigning and talking to folks in the streets, if those are the kinds of things that have come up as they've gone door to door. Certainly we hear about them occasionally when folks put in those complaints and such about street parking or that kind of stuff, that raises a major concern. And then our colleagues over in Public Works, Engineering, the Water Treatment Control Plants, Water Services with Lakefront Utilities. They're going, we've designed these whole neighborhoods around so many people per household on average. I mean, certainly there's going to be homes that have got more or less as they go through the family gentrification process, from a couple to kids to teenagers to back to the couple to a single person, as homes go through that variation. And now if you start putting three apartments, if you will, in each property, that's potentially a lot more people, would make more efficient use. Yes, there's no question. But in some cases, some of these neighborhoods might have older or smaller size pipes and may or may not be able to handle that kind of load. And there's no way really of controlling where and how that development is going to happen. Right now with our process, a second unit typically can fit. Now, as a right to have three, much more challenging.
Rob, we talked earlier a bit about some of these legislative changes, and I want to come back to that now and really explore that. And you were mentioning about the conservation authorities and working with conservation authorities. If I was somebody listening and I'm concerned about the environment and I'm concerned about green space and water tables and, you know, you name it, how are these changes going to affect our community, and why should I be concerned if I'm concerned about the environment?
Well, one of the key functions that municipalities within the levy that we pay towards our local conservation authority do is to take advantage of some of their technical experts that they have within their offices to help us understand more about things like groundwater or terrestrial ecology. It's more than what our town arborist is able to talk about. When you start talking about wood lots and wetlands, it's not something that our town arborist, I mean, he understands our park spaces and our boulevards, for example, and what tree species would be healthy there. But when you look at the kinds of ecology that's around a wetland or because we're on a migratory bird and butterfly route, what kinds of things might be required there? That's when we want to go and call up GRCA, for example, or Lower Trent for those folks that are east, they've got the team within their shops that can help us understand that those things at the municipal level, rather than trying to bring in a consultant and spend more time or money. And now with the timelines being sped up on approvals that we have to grant or give back the monies to the developers for their application fees, makes it extremely challenging from a municipal level if we don't have access to those kinds of partner agencies.
And the government also wants to freeze, reduce, or exempt fees for building affordable housing and nonprofit housing. What's going to be the impact of doing that?
Thanks. So, yep, one of the pieces of legislation that this bill proposes to change is the Development Charges Act. So there are amendments in this bill that would allow for some additional incentives for affordable housing, additional waiving of DCs, and it also limits the purpose for which development charges can be used for certain studies or certain capital reports that development charges used to be collecting for. So it does change that how we would collect and use our development charges here in the town. The thing to understand about development charges is that growth is intended to pay for growth. So, for instance, libraries and fire halls and treatment facilities, we collect a development charge for each dwelling unit constructed here in the town. So if there is a waiving of a fee for a certain type of housing, yes, that may incentivize a certain type of housing, and in this case, affordable housing, which is a key objective of this bill. However, that money is still required to fund those large capital infrastructure works like libraries and servicing. So to waive it on one hand is great and it's an incentive. However, that money will have to be made up elsewhere. So that may be coming at the expense of another development project and or perhaps the taxpayer at the end of the day.
I was thinking of that as you were speaking. I mean, if I'm a taxpayer, suddenly all this affordable housing is going to, I'm going to be paying for it out of my taxes. If I'm a taxpayer and I'm listening to this, what should I be listening for so that I'm understanding just how this could impact me then? And are there other aspects of these changes that are going to impact me?
Yeah, and it might not be immediate, but over the fullness of time, municipalities have to balance the books and balance competing interests like building parks and community facilities and all meeting all the expectations of the residents and the taxpayers. So if there is an incentive out there, whether it be development charges or waiving parkland for new types of development, I think that's great. That's an incentive. However, then it begs the question of, well, how do we plan financially and with, you know, the land requirements? How do we plan for still keeping up with the demands and providing these services and parks? So is it a matter if we're not able to get that through a development application as a condition of approval, then is it a matter of, okay, we have to make up for that that park that is needed in some other capacity? Do we have to buy land as a municipality for parkland? So again, it's great to incentivize, but then looking at the broader picture, what are the consequences and impacts of that change?
Rob, the government also wants to remove site plan control for developments of fewer than 10 residential units. Doesn't sound like much, but how does that impact things?
It becomes a potentially significant change, because usually through site plan control is where we work with the developer, work with the builder on understanding the bigger picture of, you're going to be planting some trees in your front yard. You're going to be providing so many parking spaces for the residents of your new small apartment, you know, a 4, 6, 8-plex. That the big thing is that there's going to be stormwater management put in the parking lot for that project. Urban flooding is one of the biggest problems we've got right now. And understanding as we go into climate change and resiliency is understanding our urban flooding. Again, a partnership with the conservation authorities to understand these things. But when we get down to the nuts and bolts of what's happening in the small parking lots and how much water is then headed to the street, headed towards the creeks, now, unless we have some engineering standard which can be applied at a building permit stage, which is challenging. I don't know that the building code allows those kinds of things to kick in, becomes very problematic how we're going to be able to deal with things, with those kinds of items. In the 1960s and 70s, we didn't worry about our rooftops and parking lots as much, and you'll see how much water comes off of those sites during a rainstorm. We've tried to get better with that in the last 30 years, understanding what might happen.
It's funny. I mean, we can all think about Elgin and Division Streets in Coburg, which floods when it really pours down really, really heavy. And all of a sudden, it's like you're, you know, driving through Lake Ontario. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about here, is it not?
That's exactly it. As the creek systems and the wetlands get overcharged with a rainfall or a snow melt, or you get an ice blockage or a beaver dam in the creek or those kinds of things, you're going to get surcharging in the water courses. You're going to get overland flooding, just like kind of things that occurred not that many years ago when we had heavy rainfalls coming down and flooded north of the train station, for example, up George Street North, Buchanan Street areas. That was why we put in a flood detention facility up north of there, spent a considerable sum working with provincial partners to get some of those monies. And now we can't control those things the same way. Very challenging. And one of the biggest things actually from this legislation that just from a democracy perspective is the removal of third-party appeals. that means if you're a neighbor, your rights are done. You have no ability to appeal this legislation. You can come and talk to the local council. You can go to the public meeting, make your comments known, but you can't appeal decisions of the local council on a new plan of subdivision, for example, or a new zoning change if they're going to make modifications to a property next to you. The only one that can appeal is a public body, lakefront, conservation authority, the rail lines, MTO for tank projects near the 401, or the applicant themselves if they find a condition is not to their liking. Those are the only things that will be going to the Ontario Land Tribunal. If you're a neighbor, your rights potentially, if the wording stays as it is currently drafted, could be gone. And I have a real problem with that as a planner.
I also understand that the Ontario Land Tribunal, which most people would know, was the former Ontario Municipal Board, or the OMB. It's changed now. The name's different and it has more responsibility, but it's the same body. They're looking at making faster dispute resolutions. And I guess, you know, not only is it the local people that are going to be, you know, the neighbors and the people in the neighborhood that are going to be impacted because they can't speak up. You also can't go to the, you know, a municipality can't go to the OMB, or, you know, if the developer takes the municipality to the OMB, then is justice going to be served, or is it just going to get flushed through and the developer is going to win every time? I guess, could you comment on that?
Really challenging. I take great pride in trying to listen to neighbors when they talk about answers. It's part of actually the ethics that urban planners in Ontario work under, that it may not necessarily be each and every comment, but we need to hear them and understand those bigger issues. And in some cases, different legislation or different priorities can trump a specific concern or complaint. But we have to have the opportunity to hear them and try to incorporate them and try to, if we can get some more fencing or hedging or trees planted to try to help hide things or buffer or screen, those are the kinds of things we look at, not just maximum development too close to neighbors, for example. That's the stuff that we take great pride in, trying to see how can we incorporate development into and keep a small town feel. That's the whole thing that makes Coburg, Coburg.
And I guess too, It's so important. We talk about these things today, but if this gets passed and a year from now somebody has a complaint or a concern, all this will become very, very real when you can't go and you can't be heard. So very interesting, Rob, very interesting. If I'm listening today, what should be a takeaway that you think is positive about these changes?
Some of the clarity around development charges for affordable housing is being spelled out clear. Coburg in particular has had I hope to think that we've had a good history working with our NGOs and not-for-profit groups that are putting forward affordable housing, that Coburg Council in the past has tried to do a lot of these same things. Now it's not going to be that we have to try or go through special approvals, that for those few projects that come forward, trying to get more affordable housing, that it's as a right that they're going to have development charge relief or permit reductions in fees. I think that is a positive. As we've talked about previously, we may need to find out where that money needs to come from at the end of the day when we want to put in an expansion on the water treatment plant or something like that. But I think that's positive. That those folks will know that they can move forward with some clear financial security.
Rob, going forward, what's next?
Well, I guess it's trying to see how quickly the provincial government is going to move forward on this legislation. Some legislation, they seem to move forward extremely quickly. Others, they put a draft out more for comment to see what kind of red flags or bombshells it deals with. And they take some time on it. Obviously, my hope as a professional planner here in Northumberland County is that this one gets a big second look and some redrafting before it comes back for final approval. There's some potential positives. We certainly understand trying to get more homes for folks and bringing those costs down. but billing them at the expense of a fair amount of rights and privileges we have here in Ontario is not necessarily the way we want. I would think we would want to go.
Ann Taylor Scott, Rob Franklin, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
That was Ann Taylor Scott, Director of Planning and Development, and Rob Franklin, Manager of Long Range Planning. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.